Chapter 11. Gobineau cursed again the fickleness of Ranald, the god of thieves. Things had seemed to be going so well for him. He'd escaped from the vengeful Duke Marimond and the blighted city of Mousillon, left a notorious bounty hunter, Brunner, buried beneath an entire castle, and made the rather profound discovery that a hoary old elf artifact actually was able to do what myth claimed it could do. Summon dragons. Gobineau had just decided on a course of action to exploit his discovery when misfortune had again reared its ugly head. The wizard Rudol had found him, no doubt by some sorcerous means. At first Gobineau had counted himself lucky again, making good on his escape while Rudol's men slaughtered the sorry remains of Hubold's bandit gang. But things had taken a bizarre turn then. Two of Rudol's men had ridden off in immediate pursuit of him, determined that no one should escape the massacre. Even so, their horses had been chosen for war, while Gobineau's had been selected for speed. It should have proven an easy matter to elude his pursuit. Then the same compulsion that had nearly claimed him when the ambush had been sprung came over him again. Instead of fleeing, Gobineau had turned his steed around, charging headlong into his pursuers. One of the men he had struck down with the edge of his sword, but the other had exploited the demise of his comrade, slashing at Gobineau's horse and causing the injured animal to hurl the outlaw from the saddle. Gobineau had struck the ground hard, and before he could recover his wits, the remaining soldier had disarmed him and bound his hands. The outlaw had considered that his luck might have been restored when he was brought back to Rudol, and the wizard did not kill him outright. The conjurer had immediately relieved Gobineau of the fell fang. The outlaw viewed the theft with a surprising degree of relief, something working on a primal level within his soul, taking joy in the absence of the enchanted artifact. Then things had started getting worse. First, Gobineau learned that the men aiding Rudol were soldiers in the service of Viscount de Chegnay, a man infamous for his cruelty and villainy. Then he learned why Rudol had not killed him, as the wizard began interrogating the rogue regarding Gobineau's experience with the fell fang, and how the talisman was employed. For all his knowledge of legend and lore, the wizard knew far too little about the treasure he coveted. Gobineau shuddered as he considered their present destination, and the reason Rudol continued to suffer the outlaw to live. Sir Fierswind rode at the head of the small column of riders, the wizard Rudol beside him. Though the knight towered over the wizard, everything about him dwarfing the Finn sorcerer, there was no mistaking the subdued air that hovered about him as he spoke with his companion.
"Why do we not simply return to the Chateau de Chegnay?"
Fierswind asked once again. Rudol gave the knight a thin, irritated smile. The professional warrior was becoming even more obnoxious now than he had been with his pompous ego intact. Fierswind kept asking the same question over and over again, as though Rudol might change his mind.
"We must ensure that the fell fang will do what it is supposed to do,"
the wizard told him.
"The Viscount would not be terribly forgiving if we presented him with an artifact that does not work. I would rather not trust to his forgiveness if such a thing were to happen. Would you?"
Rudol turned his attention back to the road ahead.
"We shall find the dragon, and make certain that it will obey the will of he who holds the fell fang. Only then will the Viscount hear of our success."
"The bandit," Fierswind said, gesturing to the center of the column, where the bound outlaw rode the horse of the man he had killed. "Why keep him alive?" Rudol was beginning to understand why a suspicious despot like de Chegnay trusted a man like Fierswind to command his troops. The man had probably never had an original idea in his whole life.
He used the fang, Rudolph stated. He knows how it works firsthand. I have been learning all that he knows, but it is always possible that he is holding something back. The nearer we draw to the dragon, the less keen our prisoner will be to keep things from me. After all, whatever happens to us will happen to him as well.
Rudolph stood upright in the saddle, stretching a claw-like hand forward at the darkening twilight.
On the horizon! He shouted.
Visible in the distance was an expanse of jagged hills and low mountains. The creature they were looking for was there. Rudolph could sense it. Since gaining possession of the fell fang, he found that his gi spells had persisted, now attuning itself to the monster bound to the artifact's power. Just as he had been drawn to the fang, so now the fang was drawn to the dragon.
The massive Orcal! We will find the dragon there!
Brunner rose from the path, wiping the mud from his breeches, before climbing back into Fiend's saddle. There was no question about it. The men they were hunting had turned south. It made little sense. He knew these men were in the service of Augustine de Chagnay. By rights, they should be heading east, toward the Grey Mountains and the Viscount's domain. Instead, they had turned toward the massive Orcal. That could only be because of one reason. The wizard was running the show now, and the bounty hunter had a very bad feeling that he also knew why Rudolph might be so interested in the mountain. It had been several days since they had last seen sign of the dragon. No new pillars of smoke rising from cremated towns and villages. Ithilwell had offered the possibility that Malak was resting, waiting until the fang goaded him into activity once again. It was a theory that fit all the facts, and every tale he had ever heard regarding dragons claimed that they prefer to make their lairs in the mountains.
They are heading for the mountains, Brunner told his companions.
Olgrin's face lit up, and he grinned beneath his beard.
Good. Should prove easy to ambush them, then.
The dwarf rubbed his hands in anticipation of a swift conclusion to the hunt. His enthusiasm dimmed when he saw that he was the only one pleased by the news.
"The wizard," Ithilwell said. "He must know where Malak has gone. With the fell fang in his grasp, there are spells he can use to divine the location of the dragon's lair."
Olgrin spat into the dirt.
"Well, that collapses that shaft, then. There's no way we can go up against a dragon and a mad wizard."
Brunner shook his head.
"Maybe we won't have to. If the dragon is sleeping, we might not need to worry about it."
"Which just leaves us with a mad wizard to deal with,"
Olgrin protested.
"And even if the dragon is sleeping, all this Rudolph lunatic needs to do is blow on that damn elf whistle, and the thing will be down on us like a cave fly on filth."
"We'll just have to make sure he doesn't get a chance to use it,"
Brunner told his fellow bounty hunter.
"But if your courage has deserted you, then Ithilwell and myself will see this thing through."
"Are you saying this wench has more stomach than I do?"
Olgrin growled. Before the dwarf could continue his tirade, the person in question span around in her saddle, looking back down the road they had been traveling upon. Ithilwell's eyes scanned the darkness, her ears listening to the sounds of the night. Brunner and Olgrin both became silent, watching the elf with keen interest.
"What do you see?"
Brunner asked at last, his pistol in his hand.
"Nothing," Ithilwell admitted, "but I heard something, a rider some distance away, and there is a foul scent on the wind."
She looked straight into the bounty hunter's face.
A smell of death.
The vampire! Olgrin groaned. We can't fight a dragon, and a mad wizard, and a vampire!
He exclaimed, ticking each adversary off on his fingers. No, we can't, agreed Brunner, dropping back down to the surface of the road. He strode over to his pack horse and removed a torch from one of the sacks fixed to its harness.
So, why don't we see if we can persuade our friend back there to join our side?
Sir Corbus strode out from the night like some nightmare visitation. The vampire was, if anything, even more foul in appearance than he had been when he had attacked the bounty hunter's camp. The monster's face was still scarred and mangled from the salt Brunner had cast into it and the bullet that had broken its jaw. Great gaping holes in the monster's flesh showed where carrion crows had been at work, and the putrid ruin of the vampire's destroyed eye was missing entirely now, leaving his socket an empty pit. The vampire knight led a tired-looking draft horse, a hastily secured replacement for the animal he had lost following his fall from the cliff. Brunner stood his ground in the center of the roadway, waiting for the vampire. In one hand, he held a lit torch. The other was closed about a clay jar filled with lamp oil. Some legends held that vampires could be destroyed by fire. The bounty hunter earnestly hoped that Corbus had heard the same legends. Ithilwail and Olgrin were hidden behind the trees. The elf had slipped into the trance-like state, already working to disorient the vampire's mind with her spellcraft. Beside her, Olgrin stared down the barrel of his thunderer, a double charge of powder and an extra load of shot crammed down its barrel. The dwarf was determined that Corbus would not shrug off his next shot so easily. The vampire glared about him, his broken face twisting into a sneer, as his unnatural vision easily spotted the dwarf and elf hiding off the road. Then the blood dragon turned his attention back to the man facing him. The wolf-like fangs glistened in the flickering light cast by Brunner's torch.
I had expected you to keep on running like the craven cur you are.
Corbus hissed.
This will make things much easier.
I wanted to speak to you, Brunner told the monster. I have a proposition to make.
Keep your lies to yourself,
the vampire snarled.
I've already had a taste of your treachery.
Corbus waved an armored hand before the ruin of his face.
Nothing you have to say will keep me from my vengeance.
Then revenge means more to you than finding the dragon? Brunner asked. It was a dangerous gamble, to weigh the creature's fury and hate against his need for drinking the blood of a dragon and purging himself of the curse that ran through his polluted veins. But, as the vampire heard his words, Brunner could see the indecision shining out from his eye, see some of the ferocity drain from the vampire's body. Good, the bounty hunter thought. I have his interest.
I can find the man who carries the Felfang on my own,
Corbus growled.
I don't need you.
But you do, Brunner corrected him. The man who stole the Felfang is not alone. There are others with him.
1 or 20, no man can stand against me,
the vampire knight boasted. Given the horrendous toll he had taken from Mariman's enemies in Musilon, Brunner was somehow inclined to give Corbus the benefit of the doubt.
One of them is a wizard,
the bounty hunter informed Corbus. This seemed to deflate a bit of the vampire's self-assurance. Even a creature like him was ill at ease around sorcerers and had a healthy dread of the unnatural powers such men could call upon.
"How can I trust you to honor any truce we make?"
Corbus demanded, his voice dripping with suspicion.
"Because I have no desire to face a wizard either," Brunner confessed. "And he has allies now. I'd rather balance the scales a bit, more in my favor."
The bounty hunter could see the vampire considering his proposal.
"All I want is the bandit. The dragon is your affair," Brunner told Corbus. "If the wizard wins out, then neither of us will get what he wants."
"There is still a score to be settled between you and I,"
the vampire warned.
"It can wait until the wizard is dead," Brunner promised, his tone as menacing as that of the vampire. Corbus considered his words, then nodded his head.
"You have my oath,"
Corbus told him.
"Until the wizard is dead," he added.
Even with the vampire's oath, Brunner maintained his caution.
"They are heading for the massive orc hall," Brunner informed Corbus. "They are sticking to the main road, but there are other paths I know of that might allow us to reach the mountains before them."
The vampire nodded his head.
"Then I shall continue to follow your trail," he said.
Corbus turned his horse around, walking the animal back into the darkness.
"I shall meet with you an hour after sunset, until your agreement has run its course,"
the blood dragon stated.
"Look for me in the night."
Brunner kept his eyes fixed on the vampire's back as the creature withdrew. His every instinct cried out for him to destroy the foul, loathsome creature, to oppose it with every ounce of his strength. But the bounty hunter had learned long ago to subdue his instincts. As long as the monster was useful, he could continue to make use of it. The sound of Ithilwale and Ulgrin emerging from their hiding places caused Brunner to turn.
"I still say that this is a dangerous thing you contemplate," Ithilwale told the bounty hunter. "Corbus is determined to kill you. A creature like that does not change its ways."
"Yes," Brunner agreed, "but at least our intention to kill each other is out in the open. No surprises there. Better than watching our backs all the way to the mountains, waiting for him to strike."
Ulgrin began unloading his rifle, dumping the powder onto an old blanket so he could return the explosive to his powder horn. The dwarf looked up from his labor.
"Just so long as that bloodsucker knows I'm not splitting my reward with him."
Sir Fierswind removed his helmet, staring with thinly disguised anxiety at the masses of craggy rock looming up on every side. The massive orc hall was a barren, desolate place, a blighted region almost devoid of life. Scraggly pines clung to some of the upper heights, and equally sickly-looking brambles crept about the lower slopes, vainly trying to wrest moisture from the thin layer of soil that powdered the rocks. This was a miserable region, shunned by the men of Bretonnia. There was no gain to be had here, no mineral wealth to be wrested from the mountains, no fertile land to claim or build upon. Only orcs and goblins called this place home, foul remnants of the once great hordes that had been scoured from the lands of Bretonnia during the founding of the kingdom. The ruined battlements of old watchtowers and keeps built long ago to guard against the threat of greenskins sometimes loomed into view, slowly crumbling away upon some distant hilltop, forlorn reminders of a time when the goblins could still sometimes muster great armies to despoil the lands of Kennel and Baston, Indeed, the path upon which the wizard led his allies was too even and regular to be any accident. Fierce Wind guessed that they travelled upon the remains of an old road built to facilitate the movement of troops between the watchtowers. There had been no sign of life since entering the mountains. Not a bird or beast made its appearance known to the riders. The only sound that disturbed the silence was the ever-present clop of their horses' hooves. Fierce Wind would have almost welcomed the shrill cry of a goblin or the bull-like bellow of an orc, but whatever had frightened the animals seemed to have likewise kept the greenskins in their caves. It was growing dark once more when Fierce Wind noticed the smell, the thick, cloying, acrid musk that permeated the air. It was the same smell that had clung to the lands the dragon had despoiled, the scent of the old worm's scaly body. Rudel looked over at the knight, reading the apprehension in the warrior's face.
"Yes, yes, it's close now," he told him. "Ready your torches,"
Rudel called to the other soldiers.
"We ride until we find the worm."
The wizard's words did little to encourage the men, who grumbled fearfully but made no move to obey. The brief flash of energy crackling within Rudel's eyes, however, lent the men-at-arms a certain eagerness and vigor in producing flaming brands to light their way. None of them had forgotten the ghastly and unnatural death of the bandit Hubolt. They rode onwards for several hours, following the narrow road as it wound its way between the jagged rocks, through the wind-swept valleys that slithered in the shadows of the mountains. With every step, the unease of man and beast alike began to build. Men muttered to themselves, holding holy icons close to their hearts. Horses snorted and refused to advance until spurs were dug into their flanks. Only Rudel seemed oblivious to the growing aura of dread, his face lit by an expression of feverish anticipation that caused all who gazed upon him to cringe. At last, the narrow road opened into a broader expanse. Fierce Wind could see similar roads emerging from several other valleys to merge before a stretch of land as flat and featureless as a tabletop. The flat stretch was bordered on three sides by craggy mountains, and on the fourth by a deep chasm nearly 100 yards wide. Beyond the chasm, the road continued, rising across a small hill and disappearing over the top. The chasm itself was spanned by a narrow bridge, just wide enough for two horsemen to ride across side by side. Fierce Wind knew that no human hand had ever built the span. It was too delicate, too wisp-like, to have been crafted by the same race that had produced the ponderous castles and fortresses of Bretonnia. The knight had seen the bridge leading into the city of Paravon, which was reputed to have been built by elves, and the span he now gazed upon reminded him of that one.
"Across the bridge," Rudel said. "What we are looking for is on the other side."
Given the degree to which the musky stench of the dragon had increased, Fierce Wind was inclined to believe the wizard's statement. Rudel looked over to the man-at-arms holding the reins of Gobineau's horse. The wizard leaned close, sneering into the outlaw's face.
"Perhaps there's something you'd like to say?"
Rudel asked. Gobineau shook his head, eyes wide with fear. The wizard withdrew.
"Keep him close," he ordered the soldier. "I want him near me at all times."
The passage across the bridge was an especially unpleasant one. The drop was prodigious. One of the soldiers had flung his torch into the abyss to test its depth, and the light had been a long time in reaching the bottom. Fierce Wind imagined that its end might lie at the very roots of the world. It was a possibility the knight did not like to dwell upon. he was thankful when Mansleep rose into the night sky, the pale moon bathing the ruinous landscape in soft silver light, allowing him to make out the road ahead in greater detail. He could already see Rudel and the foremost of his men-at-arms on the far side. The wizard was pointing angrily back the way they had come. Fierswind looked back over his shoulder, surprised to see four riders emerging from one of the valleys. The knight cursed. Whatever mischief the newcomers might portend, there was nothing he could do about it, until he gained the other side, the bridge being far too narrow to turn around on. The knight was nearly the last of his party to reach the far side. Looking back across the chasm, Fierswind could see that the newcomers were already on the bridge and making their way across. He looked over at Rudel. The man's face was twisted into an angry scowl.
"The bounty hunter thinks to meddle in my affairs again!"
Rudel spat, his stormy eyes fixed upon Fierswind's.
"Cut that scum down!"
the wizard ordered. Fierswind nodded, removing his great helm from where it was tied to his saddle and settling it over his head. The prospect of battle, far from agitating the knight, had a profoundly calming effect. Dragons, wizards, and hoary old artifacts were things beyond Fierswind's understanding. Sharp steel and spilled blood were arenas of knowledge in which he was far more comfortable. He would dismiss the unease, the doubt and fear that had been plaguing him, with the blood of these interlopers, whoever they were. Fierswind led his soldiers back onto the bridge, moving with such haste as they dared muster to meet their foes. The knight had always found combat to be an invigorating experience, a purifying ritual that purged soul and mind. He felt his confidence swell. Was he not a champion of Augustine de Chagnay, the most feared lord in the Grey Mountains? Had he not been tried by the fires of battle time and again, and always emerged victorious? When he returned from dealing with this rabble, it would be time to remind Rudel that a wizard was just as human as anyone else, and that 2 feet of steel would spill his guts like any other man. Brunner watched the soldiers return to the bridge, galloping across the narrow span with as much speed as they dared. The bounty hunter's fist closed about the hilt of Drake's Malice, his knuckles whitening beneath his gloves. He recognized the colors these men wore, the heraldry that belonged to Viscount Augustine de Chagnay. More, he recognized the bull-horned man of the knight riding at the forefront of the soldiers, Sir Fierswind. It had been at the end of another life that Brunner had last laid eyes upon the knight. Now it was time to settle that score and send the Chagnay's dog to yap at the gates of Mor's dark realm. Beside him, the vampire knight Sir Corbus grinned with the ghastly ruin of his face. For the vampire, battle was the only thing left of his former life, the only way he could experience again what it was like to truly be alive. Brunner could sense the eagerness boiling within the monster as Corbus drew his sword.
"The knight is mine," Brunner cautioned the vampire.
Corbus gave the bounty hunter a savage look.
"Consider it a term to our agreement," the bounty hunter added, in a voice too chill to brook argument.
Perhaps there was still enough humanity left within the vampire to remember what it was like to feel honest human hate. Behind them, Ithilwale and Ulgrin hung back, understanding that any adversaries who made it past Brunner and Corbus would be their problem. Corbus was the first to reach their enemies. The vampire's blade flashed in the moonlight as the monster drove it with hideous force through the neck of his enemy's horse, slashing deep into the animal's flesh and removing the hand gripping its reins. The fury of the stroke caused the animal to topple, pitching over the side of the bridge and carrying its screaming rider into the abyss.
The vampire did not delay for even a second in considering his enemy's death, but leapt from the saddle, crashing down upon the stonework of the span. Corbus snarled up at the approaching riders, licking blood from the slaughtered horse from his face and hands. The riders paused in their approach, horrified by the ghastly sight. Even Brunner hesitated, seeing firsthand how very close the vampire had been to losing control of his bloodlust during their long ride through the massive orc hall. Now the monster acted without restraint, glorying in his bloodthirsty assault. One attacker was not as timid about fighting the vampire, however, and Brunner urged Fiend forward to block the man's attack. If anyone on the bridge would cross swords with Fierswind, it would be Brunner. Drake's malice crashed against Fierswind's sword of blackened steel, a metal cry not heard for many years. The knight tried to batter away the bounty hunter's blade, but found that the angle of his attack was ill-suited to such a parry.
"You should have hunted easier prey,"
Fierswind snarled.
"This one belongs to the Viscount."
The knight slashed down at Brunner, but found Drake's malice once again between his blow and his target.
"Leave it to the Chegnay to send a jackal like yourself to steal another man's property,"
the bounty hunter snarled back. He returned Fierswind's attack with one of his own, the edge of Drake's malice deflected by the knight's thick armor. Fierswind snorted disdainfully at the bounty hunter.
"You face your death, scavenger. I've put 50 men in their graves. One more will not trouble me."
"How many of those were women and children?" Brunner retorted, his blade lashing out once more.
Fierswind allowed it to glance from his vambrace, snarling back at his antagonist. "Good," the bounty hunter thought. "Puncture that pompous arrogance of yours, and you throw all your skill and training right out the window. Nice to see that some things never change." Rudel watched as the battle on the bridge unfolded. Brunner seemed to have picked up a rather motley group of allies. The two hanging back were a dwarf and some woman, one with more than a little touch of the power about her. The armored warrior, who had ridden forward with Brunner, was amazing. A whirling engine of slaughter and destruction. Rudel had seen men work some incredible feats when gripped by the juice of Crimson Shade, but the bounty hunter's ally put even such impressive moments of brutality to shame. His first stroke had nearly decapitated a horse, and since then he had accounted for another of Fierswind's men, ripping the soldier from his saddle and tearing out his throat with his teeth. Fierswind himself was beset by the bounty hunter, seemingly unable to deal the man a deciding blow, while Brunner managed to land minor strikes against the knight's legs and arms. It was an old trick that the knight should have recognized, a tactic designed to sap the strength from his limbs, but Fierswind seemed lost in some mindless frenzy. Rudel smiled. It was about time he ended this show anyway. The outcome of the battle was inconsequential. No one would be leaving the bridge alive in any event. The outcast, celestial wizard, began to draw the power into his body, feeling the magic energy writhing within his veins. Yes, indeed, it was time to end this.
"Get a grip on that horse!"
Rudel ordered the only remaining soldier on his side of the chasm. The man-at-arms dutifully strengthened his hold on the reins of Gobineau's animal. Then the wizard raised a claw-like hand, gesturing toward the bridge. In response to the words of power whispering from his mouth, a fierce gale howled across the span. Rudel watched as men and beasts struggled against the gale, fighting to retain their footing upon the narrow strip of stonework. The first to fail in the struggle was one of Fierswind's men. Toppling from the saddle, the wretch fell screaming into the chasm, his cry strangely distorted by the shrieking tempest. The others seemed to have better sense, dismounting as the wind began to grow. Rudel could see the animals racing for the far side of the span, abandoning their masters to the sorcerer's storm. One of the animals crashed against the woman he had noticed earlier, causing them both to fall onto the edge of the bridge. Inhumanly nimble, the woman just managed to grab hold of the horse's reins as she was pushed off the bridge, hanging above the abyss. A valiant effort, but it would not avail her. The storm was going to grow much worse before it expended itself. The wizard looked aside at his remaining lackey and his prisoner.
"Come along," he said. "There is nothing more to be done here, and much to be done on the other side of the hill."